Page 9, The California Story by Catherine Skivers. Author's note, the forerunner of the Blind Californian was known as a news bulletin. I was editor of that magazine for some time. The last issue that I covered in that capacity was the February 1959 issue. The Awards and History Committee has a Braille copy of that magazine. The contents list the first three articles as Council President Resigns, California Loses Longtime WCW Chairman, WCW Directs Activities, Chairman Resigns. The next article was entitled The California Story, and here it is. Your editor feels that because of the foregoing letters written by Mr. Campbell and Mr. Fogarty, it is important that members of the council understand fully why these resignations have been brought about. Both persons have given long and dedicated service to the council. Their decision was obviously taken under trying circumstances, and only after serious reflection upon a variety of events and developments in the California organization. It is time for the whole California story to be told. Contrary to the tale commonly told today, the conflicts in the council did not begin with controversy over the Card Amendment to the National Federation's Constitution, proposed nearly a year ago. Its origins lie simply and directly in the efforts of the NFB's president to take control of the organization, which rightfully belongs to the blind people of California. These endeavors began long ago. As the great and beloved Dr. Perry said in his letter addressed to the delegates and friends of the council shortly before last fall's convention in Los Angeles, the NFB has been working on this idea since before my retirement. As a matter of fact, Dr. Perry's retirement in December 1953 was in largest measure brought about by the manipulations of the Federation's president and his personal devotees. The groundwork was laid the previous year when the political advocates of Dr. Tenbrick secured his election as the council's vice president, hoping that their chief would inherit the council's presidency along with that of the Federation, if their efforts to bring about Dr. Perry's retirement were successful. Page 10. Feeling that internal friction might be avoided, Dr. Perry resigned in the middle of his term of office, but emphasized what seemed to be to him, as well as to others, the necessity of maintaining the independent identity and existence of the council and its separateness from the Federation. He and others realized that for the council to serve the wishes and the interests of this state, it would be absolutely necessary that the organization have its own officers and programs, which would be independent of the officers and projects of the National Federation. Accordingly, Robert Campbell was elected as Dr. Perry's successor at a special convention. Many may recall that Dr. Tenbrick thereupon peevishly resigned his office in the council and did not participate in council activities for some little time. Page 11. The Federation's president could not succeed in taking control of the council directly himself. Soon, however, he and his ardent followers undertook repeated efforts to have one or another of his loyal advocates selected to leadership of the council. In 1954, it was Alan Jenkins. He withdrew from competition before the voting began, when sentiment made it clear that his defeat was certain. In 1956, the man closest to Dr. Tenbrick at the time, Kenneth Jernigan, tried his luck. Though he campaigned vigorously, he lost by a two-thirds majority. The Federation candidate in 1958 was Russell Kletzing, who was also unable to defeat Mr. Campbell in a popular vote, even though never before in this state had so much lavish effort and treasure been poured into a campaign by an aspirant to political office in our council. Observers in California have a simple explanation for the increasing of the Tenbrick faction to turn out larger votes at council elections. It was the obvious result of building a tight political machine. It can certainly not be said to result from a mass shift of opinion among the blind members of the state organization. It is time that open recognition be given to the fact that this machine is composed mainly of former students of the Orientation Center in Oakland, headed by Alan Jenkins, and where Kenneth Jernigan was employed as an instructor. Nearly every Orientation Center graduate interviewed has stated that, although they receive useful training to orient them to blindness, they received a major part of their training in so-called Federationism, whether they wanted it or not. The indoctrinated ex-students, imbued with personal admiration for Tenbrek by their training, have with skilled direction been induced to infiltrate the member clubs of the council to gain leadership and particularly to get themselves elected as delegates to the council. Observers in California have a simple explanation for the conventions. Page 12. To further this objective, they have organized themselves and some unalert blind people in their areas into roving bands for the purpose of ranging far and wide in surrounding cities and counties to join the local clubs and then increase their voting strength. A conspicuous example can be noted in Southern California, where one such group has attempted to join every local organization from San Diego County to the San Fernando Valley. It must be stated frankly that what has been happening in California is only part of the picture of what has been happening in the National Federation itself. The NFB president, throughout the early years of the national organization, enjoyed and exercised a high degree of personal authority. Through lack of funds, it was impossible for the Federation's executive board to meet, and obviously only the broadest decisions regarding national policy could be made at national conventions. With the growth of the Federation and its increased ability to raise funds, many representatives from the state affiliates felt and began to express the desirability of wider participation in the activities of the NFB and its policy-making processes. In the attempt to maintain and safeguard the power and authority he had accumulated for himself, our national president resisted and shunted aside all reasonable approaches to the discussion of the reforms, which it was felt were timely and necessary. To consolidate his authority and assure the concentration of power in his office, the NFB president first proposed and secured the adoption of a resolution at a special NFB committee meeting in September of 1957, which gave him almost complete control of the treasury and staff of the Federation. And then he contrived to have this same resolution proposed to the Federation at large as a constitutional amendment by his loyal first vice president, Mr. George Card. Page 13. During the spring of 1958, an active campaign was carried on by the Federation's officers and paid staff to induce conventions of state affiliates to instruct in advance to have their delegates to vote for the Card Amendment. The NFB president clearly did not wish delegates to go to the Boston Convention with free and open minds to hear opposing arguments on the merits of the amendment and cast their votes according to their independent convictions. These efforts succeeded in many state organizations, but it will be remembered by those of you who attended the council's convention last May that it was twice decided by vote of the delegates that the council's president and national delegate should go to Boston without instructions and free from a prejudicial commitment made in advance of the discussion in Boston. It will be remembered also that Mr. Campbell voted against a quick adoption of the Card Amendment, feeling that, as California had done in revising its own constitution, this proposed revision of the Federation's constitution should be studied further by a constitutional convention or an interim study committee. For this expression of honest and independent judgment by our council's delegate, which the NFB's president labeled widely through this state as rank disloyalty to him personally, Mr. Campbell became the immediate target of a well-organized effort to purge and discipline him by securing his defeat in the state organization's election last November. Within a very few days from his return from Boston, Dr. Tenbrek announced that he would lead the list of sponsors for Mr. Campbell's opponent. His subservient followers in California followed suit. The Federation's office in Berkeley and secretarial staff were used unsparingly to turn out literature designed to bring about Mr. Campbell's defeat. The resources of the National organization's treasury were unquestionably used without check or hesitation to elect the Federation's handpicked candidate, Mr. Russell Kletzing. Mr. Campbell and his supporters had nothing but their personal funds to fight off the onslaught organized in the NFB's office. Page 14. Even the pages of the Braille Monitor were employed to advertise Mr. Kletzing in the effort to sway votes at the oncoming election. This massive interference by the NFB president in the elections of the California affiliate did not succeed in defeating Mr. Campbell, but it did result in bringing about such confusion of purposes and principles in the minds of convention delegates that a majority antagonistic to Mr. Campbell was elected to the council's executive board. As will be seen elsewhere in this bulletin, the result has made effective administration of council affairs virtually impossible. The blind in every other state affiliate of the NFB should study closely and think long on what has happened in California. It can happen in every other state. It has already happened in some measure in states, as shown by letters from Tennessee, which are published in these pages for general information. Mr. Campbell has felt compelled to resign. The administration of council affairs will now be under the management of persons who, in turn, are under the direct control of the Federation's president until the new elections can be held. In promoting Mr. Kletzing's candidacy, no effort was spared in the attempt to discredit Mr. Campbell and his supporters. No political tactic was thought too low to be utilized. Mr. Campbell's personal integrity was assailed and the reputation of his supporters assaulted. False promises for jobs for various delegates were made without hesitation if they could sway a vote. In one instance, the NFB president, who is also president of the American Brotherhood for the Blind, appointed as voting delegate to represent the Brotherhood a person who, at the time, was not even a member of that organization. The present executive of the Iowa State Agency for the Blind returned to this state several days before the election of last fall to claim a right to vote as delegate and assist in the heavy lobbying of other delegates voting at the convention. Page 15. The chiefs of several agencies serving the blind in California, along with some individuals employed by these and other agencies serving the blind of California, participated actively in the Kletzing campaign, exerting to the fullest extent the influence of their respective offices and positions, in complete disregard of the fact that many delegates, as well as their constituents, were at present or might be in the future in need of the services of these agencies or financial assistance. Whether the state organizations of the blind in California will represent the true wishes of the blind membership throughout the next year and one half, or whether the council will be subverted to the uses of the political interest of the president of the National Federation, is a question which now confronts every person interested in the future of the council and the welfare of the blind of this state. The future will, of course, provide the answer, but the shape of the answer can be determined by how alert the membership of the local organizations becomes and how insistent they will be that the facilities of the state organization can be used for state purposes alone. The resigning president of the council conducted his campaign on the principle that a state organization of the blind must be controlled by the blind of the state, and that a state organization of the blind has and must continue to have an independent existence as a separate entity from the National Federation. The real issue underlying the conflict now raging in California is whether the state organization would be mere creature and servant of the will of the National Federation's officers and leadership, or whether the national organization should be the instrumentality of the state organization serving their will and needs. Sooner or later, the conflict will spread to every state affiliate of the Federation, unless other affiliates begin to realize immediately that the extraordinary appetite for power shown by the present national leadership must be starved and controlled. The California story should be a warning and a lesson for all to heed. The member organizations of the California Council now face the task of reclaiming their state affiliate. They will have the help of many of us, including Mr. Campbell. Our platform will be that a state affiliate must belong to the blind of the state, and the National Federation must belong to the state affiliates, which must compose it. Since your present editor cannot sincerely serve the incoming council administration of Mr. Kletzing, inasmuch as I am entirely in disagreement with the attitudes and policies revealed by Mr. Kletzing and his majority at the January 10 meeting of the council executive meeting, which I attended, I am adding my resignation to the growing list of resignations of those who share my philosophy. At the present time, I wish to pledge myself that I, along with others that feel as I do, shall continue the struggle for the right and opportunity of every blind individual to enjoy freedom to express his ideas without fear of reprisal or other consequences from either Agencies for the Blind or the National Federation of the Blind.